I'm Karen McMahon with Pig Health Today, and I'm visiting with Dr. Brian Bishop. And today he's going to give us an update on the challenge of getting rid of PRRS in swine units.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. You know, one of the big things, I guess, that we, when we look at PRRS, there's a lot of different products out there that we can use. A lot of the time, what we find is that our issues that we see are not necessarily due to how people are administering the vaccine or whether we're using the right vaccine, but it's all about how staff is treating the piglets, how staff are being aware and conscious of the fact that a PRRS litter of piglets might be there, and that might be all there is, but if they start moving those piglets around to other litters, of course, now they've spread the PRRS around. And so a lot of our quote-unquote PRRS failures, you know, PRRS vaccine failures really aren't probably the vaccine's fault at all. It really comes down to kind of the processes, the daily processes that people go through on a day-to-day basis on the sow farm. And of course, the question always, is the vaccine even being given?
Number one line now for eliminating PRRS from a herd is using vaccines.
That's kind of the new protocol. Yep, it used to be a live virus inoculate of, you know, collected serum, intentionally exposing sows to that live serum. What we're finding is that it's a lot harder on sows and piglets than we think. While the goal is to get blanket immunity to the whole herd, it's a live PRRS, and therefore our sows are going to get sick, and we see a lot of production constraints from that. So using vaccine is kind of the next, the standard of practice in the majority of PRRS responses nowadays. We need to vaccinate the herd October 15th, in that range, and then in March 15th in the spring, because those are the two most likely times, on average, that we're going to break the PRRS. What we find is while industry-wide that's the average, regionally, there's just an incredible variation when you're going to break. And so, by being part of the Swine Health Monitoring Program, our part is that we report on a weekly basis any change in PRRS status on any farms that we work with, and in return, we, and all that's anonymous, and kind of put in as a group data through all of the people that contribute to it. And in return, of course, we then can see on a week-by-week basis, okay, maybe we're not seeing a lot of PRRS in our area, but nationwide or regionally, PRRS is starting to increase, and we can at least maybe know a little, be a little smarter about how we change the timing of what herds go through and do their whole herd PRRS vaccination.
A worker may not know that a litter it has PRRS,
sure,
and they'll spread it. How are you dealing with that?
The common practice is to take blood samples from piglets due to be weaned, test them for PRRS, and see if they have PRRS. And if that's positive, what you don't know is, did that come from the sow? Have they had it their whole life, you know, from 3 weeks till they got weaned? Or were they born negative, but somebody contaminated them with PRRS? And so one of the newer, in the past couple of years, things that we've been doing is taking processing fluids, basically taking piglet testicles, putting those, pooling those, testing that. That would be approximately 3 days of age that we'd get those samples. By testing that, we could test an enormous number of piglets on a farm. Presumably, half the piglets on the farm could be tested. Then we know at least, okay, they're getting it really early. And being able to show those employees those results, you know, I did the calculation for a client of mine. We took some serum samples out of day-old piglets, and what we found was that one piglet had enough PRRS in its bloodstream, just one piglet, to infect, you know, if we wanted to do an LVI of a sow herd using that dosage, enough to infect the entire population, sow population in the United States in one piglet. And so showing them the math, saying this is why we have to be careful with these piglets, because we only have 1,500 sows on that farm, and there's enough in that one piglet to infect 6 million.
How did you handle that?
Well, showing them those numbers and saying, guys, I know you want to save piglets, and I applaud that, but think of what happens when we try and move that piglet to another sow. Think of how that is going to affect all the other piglets on that sow. And so it makes tough decisions, because everybody's trying to save pigs. And it's human nature. That's what all my employees want to do. But it goes against some of the things we're taught. They got to look at the big picture, step back and say, okay, how, you know, what's the thing that's best for the farm, that's best for the future.
Right. So are you doing that kind of testing? Do they do it frequently?
General practice on some, on a sow herd that is not yet broke, has been to do these processing fluids on a monthly basis, just to test for kind of routine, on a routine basis. Once they broke, then we tend to do that in combination with wean pig blood samples. And we're finding PERS in those processing fluids sometimes a couple weeks before we see anything on a sow farm. And so before we were doing that, the only routine testing we would do is in wean piglets. And our question now is, you know, we always thought, oh, we broke on this date. Well, it may have been 2 weeks before that that we truly broke. You know, PERS is one of those things, you know, I've always said as a vet, it's the one disease that makes me look bad, because we, as an industry, you know, as a vet industry, we just, after 30 plus years, we still just don't know everything about it.
If you're finding PERS in these litters, in these very young pigs, how did they break with it?
If you could tell me that, we'd be rich. So we don't know exactly how farms break necessarily. That's the most frustrating part about a PERS break. Sometimes you'll get a really obvious, oh, the pit pumping crew was here yesterday, we broke today. Okay, that's a, you get a pretty good indication that's real, but a lot of the time we have no idea. We know that it can go aerosol, so it's easy to blame that, because it's nobody's fault if it goes aerosol, presuming you don't have a filtered farm. And one of the good reasons to have a filtered farm is at least you know it didn't come aerosol, as long as you've been keeping up on your maintenance. But we just don't always know exactly how that happens. You know, we try to track it down and we come up with a theory, but at the end of the day, it's just an educated guess at that point.
There hasn't been quite as much biosecurity in finishing units. Do you think that's going to change or part of the problem?
It's always a part of the problem. You know, any positive sow farm, obviously that's one location that's bad, but if they're shedding for up to 4 months, you know, they've now filled, you know, some 12, 13, 14 plus finishing sites in that time that have now disseminated those PERS positive pigs. And for the finisher guys, there's nothing that they can do about that. They got PERS positive pigs. I have a client of mine where we test routinely for PERS, and we've, in the last 3 years, in our nurseries, which have shower in, shower out, and a sow farm, we've had no PERS breaks. And in nurseries, we've had 2, and out of 36 some groups coming through them. And in the finishers, 100% of those finishers broke with PERS in 3 years in Northwest Iowa. 100% of all those, of every group, has broke with a different strain of PERS at some point. So yeah, absolutely, those finishers have a boot change, they have a bench, they have coveralls change, but I think there's gonna be, and that's a tremendous cost to have every single group break, of course. To have good pigs, obviously PERS negative up till that point, break with PERS, you know, it's a tremendous cost, to build a shower is pretty cheap. So I know a number of systems are going that way and have gone that way for a number of years, but there's definitely still more and a better, needs to be better awareness for finisher biosecurity.
Isn't there some financial incentive?
There's a huge financial incentive, and sometimes, you know, if you don't dial down the numbers and actually show the numbers, it's hard to say, well, why do this? And you know, for a shower, I don't think it's the cost. It's just, I mean, these guys are in there twice a day. That's just that much extra time and energy that it's gonna take. The costs, you know, the return on investment is huge, but sometimes it's hard to make that leap.
Right. Well, is there anything else that you're looking ahead to PERS that you see coming that maybe will helpful in the future?
Obviously, there's talk now about, there's obviously been a number of PERS elimination programs in certain areas where there's less hog dense areas. They've been very successful. In hog dense areas, it's very difficult to prevent, to eliminate PERS from a region. There's just so many factors involved. But you know, there is some new technology coming out with PERS either resistant or PERS, you know, things that cannot be infected by PERS. That's still a ways off into the future, and certainly once those hit the market, PERS won't be an issue, at least for anybody that has those, which will help the rest of the industry because there's less shedding. But there's always going to be a new disease that's going to be a problem. So we can figure one disease out, and some, it's like playing whack.
Have to keep all of us in business.
Absolutely. That's never going to be an issue. There's always something